Talk radio just got a little cooler.
Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
Sanctuary cities. You don't know what they are. You should. You're going to learn that word. You're going to hear that word. Like a lot. Donald Trump and his administration is getting ready to have a showdown with sanctuary cities. About 12 of these cities roughly account for 20% of undocumented immigrants. What a sanctuary city is, essentially, is a city where if somebody is arrested or if somebody is pulled over or if somebody, the local police department, the local law enforcement deal with the issue there and they do not report the person's status whatsoever. Whether they're legal, illegal, they report nothing. Sanctuary cities are cities where people who are undocumented go and they feel that they're it's a safe space for them to be in. It's a safe space for them. Federal money comes to a lot of these cities. And the power of the purse is huge. The power of cash, the power of money. What's the money talks? Money talks. Some of these cities don't get as much money as other cities, but federal money does flow to a lot of these cities. Donald Trump is threatening to essentially withhold federal cash if they don't comply with federal law. And this is that thing we run into, right? I believe weed should be legal. Federally, it's illegal. But in Washington and Colorado and now several other states, you're able to smoke it, whether medicinally or actually it's just recreational use. And everybody turns a blind eye, right? And we do. Being here illegally is exactly that. It's illegal. But for a lot of people in cities, they turned a blind eye because most of the people that come here are not criminals, rapists, murderers. Not that there's not people that come here escaping things they've done elsewhere. But most of the people that come here are good people looking to better their lives for themselves and their families. Anybody with half a heart or even a speck of heart can understand that. Because in any good human being in a situation where you saw your family struggling would probably look to do the same thing. And if you didn't, then I guess you don't like your family. Oh, Chad, you jerk. What will they do? That's going to be the big thing. What is Donald going to do for sanctuary cities and immigration? Is he going to fight it? Look, I get frustrated with illegal immigration, and I get frustrated like tenfold. You know what? We have ignored the problem for years. We have ignored the problem from top to bottom. Both sides are culpable in the ignoring of the problem because one side is building a permanent underclass and potential future voters, and the other one was enjoying the fact that they had cheap labor here. You know what I feel sorry for? A lot of these people that are here illegally who are a political football. That's all they are. They're a political football. That's it. I feel sorry for people that have come here and they're used as a political football. Do you think the Democrats really give a rat's ass about these people? They only care about who votes for them. Do you think the Republicans care? They don't care. It's a political football. That's it. No more, no less. And they're in the middle of it. And they're being used. They're being punted around from side to side. In fact, there are 364 counties that limit cooperation with federal immigration, including 39 cities. Some of the cities in the biggest ones, District of Columbia, San Francisco, Chicago, Providence, Denver, New York, Baltimore, Oakland, Minneapolis, Los Angeles, and Santa Fe, Aurora, Colorado, Portland. You get the idea. A lot of liberalish states, a lot of states like that who are totally fine with people being there illegally. It's a tough situation. It is. It's a tough situation to be in. But we have to fix immigration. We have to fix immigration. There's got to be a fix there. I get frustrated with my country as much as I love it because we don't seem to always address the things that need to be addressed, whether it's race, whether it's the economy, whether it's immigration. We address it in such a half-ass way, in a half-hearted way, and then we all pat ourselves on the back as if something was accomplished, when in the end, whatever was accomplished was nothing. It was nothing that's going to change anything or alter the outcome for people in a positive way. We must address illegal immigration. We must do. We must. We can't sustain it anymore. It has been a net positive so far. But that, I think, in fear, is coming to an end. And then the backlash will be bigger than it already is now. But this just even much about the illegal immigration is the frustration I find with this is the fact that it's the picking and choosing of things, right? It's the picking and choosing of sanctuary city. We're not going to talk to the feds. We're not going to talk to these people. We're not going to talk to those people. It's like, can't we be honest with ourselves and say, look, here's the deal. Sanctuary cities, if you find somebody that's wanted for a heinous crime, that is wanted in another country for something heinous, then you know what? You should report some stuff to the feds. I have zero problems with that. If somebody who is a gardener gets pulled over and they don't have a license and they don't have, don't report that. That's a waste of time. Let's get past those things. Let's focus on the things that matter. I talk to a lot of people, both conservative, liberal, very, 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 very conservative, very, very progressive. And by and large, most people agree that, yeah, we need to deal with it. We got some pretty good people here. We maybe have some great people. We have a few bad people. Get rid of the bad people. But how can we make it so we can keep the good people here that want to be a part of our country? There are those people out there. Throw everybody out. Throw them all out. Ah, there's those whiny-ass people. But by and large, most people aren't that way. Even people who are conservative. Even people who are really conservative. Like ridiculous conservative. Most people are bright enough to realize that you're not going to round up 12, 14, 17. I don't even know how many people it is. Every time it's a new number. We're not. And there's a great fix along the way. But the sanctuary cities are going to have a showdown. And Trump is going to be the kind of person that's willing to push the envelope. He is a zero-sum guy. He wants to win, and he knows what negotiations are about. He knows how to sit across the aisle or across the table from somebody and have a real negotiation and a stare down. And he's going to test these. Some of these cities are going to feel it. Some of them, they only get 1 or 2%. Some of them get 10, 12, 25% of their money from the feds. And they're going to feel it. They're going to absolutely feel the pinch. But a year from now, what will have changed? Sanctuary cities are still going to be doing sanctuary things, probably. The feds are going to still be fighting with the local law enforcement. Nobody's going to be talking. Will a wall be built or not? I don't know. I doubt a full wall is going to be built. And we'll be talking about illegal immigration again. When there are so many ways that we as a country can fix things, but nobody ever really wants to deal with the problem. Because the problem to solve it is political suicide. That's the beauty of the thing about Trump that I like. Of all the things I like about Trump and the things that I don't like, and there's a lot of both, the one thing I think that overrides all of it, both good and bad, is that I hope if we get nothing else out of Trump except, you know, if we get 4 years of gridlock, which is possible, that we get to see inside and be exposed to the reality of what we're dealing with in places like D.C. What these people are really like. How serious they are when it comes to anything from illegal immigration to education to whatever. That's what I think we'll get out of it. But he made his first stand and his last stand with a few things in between about building a wall and taking care of immigration. And he's going to start with sanctuary cities. The funny thing is, the only thing that may not be sanctuary enough isn't for the illegals, but it's going to be for the people who are running everything, because it sounds like Trump is going to come down hard and it's going to be a fight. And in the world that he lives in, it's who blinks first. And I wouldn't bet against him. The Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show Twitter. C-H-A-D-B-E-N-S-O-N, chat at chadbensonshow.com. You could text the show, 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. Several text messages coming in about sanctuary cities. Oh, Chad, one texter writes in, you are a jerk if you think that sanctuary cities are good. That's it? I'm a jerk? Okay. Maybe. Maybe I'm just a person who's looking at it from a real standpoint. Every hour at this time, we do this thing called What's Next? What's next for civility in politics? Chad Benson Show.
You're listening to The Chad Benson Show.
We do this thing every day called What's Next at this time. What's Next? We're going to get to that in a moment. Talking about immigration before we went to break. 844-DIG-CHAD, 844-344-2423. The battle between sanctuary cities and the federal side of the purse strings, if you will. Whether or not these cities are going to get federal money. That is in front of us. Mickey, Florida, what's going on?
Chad, man, first and foremost, I wanted to say first-time listener, first-time caller. Love the show.
Thanks.
Next, I wanted to say is that Donald Trump said that he was going to make Mexico pay for the wall. And from what I understand, what I read recently, is that he's doing that by taking the cartel money that we have basically confiscated over the course of years, and is going to take that cartel money and use it to build that wall.
You know what? Zero problem with that. If that's how he gets the money and we bust cartels and there's $100 million cash and he wants to use that to funnel it to building the wall, I have zero problems with that.
Tell me it's not brilliant.
You know what? I never underestimate the guy. I never do, man. I appreciate you listening, man. Thanks so much for your call. You just can't. You can't underestimate this guy. And that's why I say, who blinks first? It's going to be interesting. We do this thing called What's Next every day at this hour. We do this here. Today, I want to talk about civility in politics. We didn't see a lot of civility in politics, but it's not just politics in general, between each other. Politics has been a nasty blood sport since the time of, I don't know, the Romans, et tu, Brutus? I mean, really. It's been ugly. It's been violent. It's not just us. How many times a year do you get a link that, oh, here's two Korean lawmakers beating each other up. Here's two, here's two people from the Ukraine fighting each other. Here's somebody in Colombia that's going nuts. It's not just us. It's everywhere. The difference between now and, again, a decade ago or so is we got more involved with politics and we made it more personal than ever before, because of social media. Because of social media, we attacked each other. We yelled at each other. We said things to people who we think were our friends, or maybe actually were our friends and family members, that we would never say to their face. I think it's safe to say that the civility is no longer in politics. Not that it ever was, but when it comes to us as human beings, that civility, I think, is out and gone. So what's next for civility? None. Zero. People like the fact that they can be heard. People like the fact that they can get pissed and angry. People like the fact that they can be loud and have their opinion splashed out there to everybody that's in their group to see. And they like the fact that they can do it in such a way that there's very little repercussions. Oh, people may comment back, or people may do, they may text their friends or this, that, and the other. But by and large, it is without record, you know, it was out with any kind of reprisal. You just throw it out there. And we don't care anymore. We're not civil to each other in many ways. We're not. So why should we be civil in politics, especially because we are emotional creatures when it comes to certain things? Everybody's got that hot button. No matter how pragmatic they are, no matter how calm and cool they are, there is a hot button for everybody. And for a lot of people, it was Donald Trump versus anybody else that was their hot button. They rallied to Trump or they rallied against him. And we got to see what a lot of people were thinking, and we got to see what a lot of people wanted to say and said. And we got to see a lot of people throw away friendships. There is no civility in politics. And to be honest with you, I don't think there's going to be much civility in politics anymore, especially and as long as we have social media. That, my friends, is going to go out the window. So that's what's next for civility in politics. Joining us next, guy that I find interesting, sports guy, Joe Buck. His dad was the famous Cardinals announcer and Jack Buck, and he's got a new book out that is, it's great. It's absolutely fantastic. It's funny, it's entertaining, it's engaging, it's opening his soul and letting you see that while he has a great life, he's also had some issues in his life, and he's very open and honest about it. He's going to join us next, the Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show Twitter. You can text the show. Please do. Love it when you do. 323-538-2423. 323-538-2423. Joe Buck from Fox NFL and Major League Baseball joins us straight at Chad Benson Show.
Chad Benson Show. Talk radio just got a little cooler.
Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
I love things that are interesting. I love people that are interesting. And I like sports because I think sports crosses every kind of genre in life, from the good, the bad, the ugly, but it's all real. And joining us now is a man who is sports, at least a voice of sports. He's got a new book out called Lucky Bastard, My Life, My Dad, and the Things I'm Not Allowed to Say on TV. Joe Buck joins us. Hey, Joe.
Hey, thank you. Thanks. Appreciate it.
First and foremost, your new book, Lucky Bastard, My Life, My Dad, and the Things I'm Not Allowed to Say on TV. What aren't you allowed to say on TV, Joe?
Well, am I allowed to say it on here? Yeah, there's some potty mouth words in there. But for the most part, I think I'm not allowed to say it, not because it's dirty or it's something that you shouldn't talk about. There's no time to talk about it. And so when I'm doing play-by-play, you know, people I think have an opinion of me, or they've put me in a box, or they think I am lucky, as the title of the book suggests, because I'm my dad's kid. But you know, I don't think they have a real picture as to what I'm about, or you know, what my first 47 years on earth have been like, and going through a procedure that nearly cost me my career with my voice, going through divorce, losing my father, and his 7 months in the hospital, getting remarried, and my relationship with my daughters. It's more than just a sports book. And so all of that stuff falls into the category of stuff that, in the course of a giant Steelers game, I'm not going to talk about. So that was really the reason why, and to give people a better clue as to who the person is yelling and screaming on your TV on the weekends covering baseball and football.
You know, I like interesting. We do talk here. We talk mostly politics with some pop culture. You're a sports guy. I always like sports in the sense that I think sports is the best reality show out there because it's real and it's raw and it's not made up. And, you know, I've been reading a lot of this book. And you know what? Just I think everybody looks at you and they think Joe had it all. His dad, of course, Jack Buck, the famous, you know, announcer and one of the greatest announcers of all time. And you kind of follow within his footsteps. It had to be easy, but it's probably not as easy as people think. And many times I'm sure it's probably harder because your foot may get in the door, but more is expected of you.
Yeah, I think so. I do believe this. I got a start in this business long after I started paying attention. And I had a master's course in how to broadcast a Major League Baseball game by virtue of the way I grew up. I used to sit two seats over from my dad in the Cardinal radio broadcast booth. I'd have a earphone up to my ear, and I'd watch him do his job so I could hear the radio mix in my ear, and I could watch him and Mike Shannon and their mannerisms and what it took to broadcast and how they approach different situations in a game. And I let all that just pour in. And so by the time I was 19 broadcasting AAA baseball or 21 broadcasting big league baseball or 27 calling the World Series on Fox, you know, I had been at it for a long time. Even though my age said I was young, I really paid attention. And I think I did that because my dad loved what he did so much that it was only natural for me to want to go into that line of work. So if I was going to sit in the office with him and watch him do a radio interview like I'm doing right now, I knew as a three-year-old that I had to sit there and not make noise. Or if we were going on a road trip, he took me to every National League city. By the time I was 12, we'd be in L.A. and we'd stop in Vegas, and he'd give me $20 to play Donkey Kong, and he'd roll craps all night. And then that's the way I grew up. And so I was kind of road tested at a young age too. And so was I lucky? Absolutely. But was the scrutiny tough when I started? No doubt. And if I hadn't been able to cut it, I think I would have been gone twice as fast as anybody else, because people look at you like, oh, I know how you got your job. And then it's like, well, let's just see how good this kid is. And you better be ready, and you better be good, and you can't fake it on radio or TV. So the positives far outweigh the negatives, but I knew I was under the microscope early.
Talking to Joe Buck, of course, you hear him on Fox, Major League Baseball. Your partner there, Troy Aikman. I love reading in this book about this with your new book, Lucky Bastard. And you talk about Troy Aikman, and you talk about Chris Collinsworth, and you talk about how he's just this – the best, like, play-by-play guy that actually could do play-by-play as well as sit there side-by-side with you and do what Troy does.
Yeah, I really believe that. I think Chris, and the reason why, Chris got off the field, and people that are younger don't remember how good of a player he was. He was a really good receiver for Cincinnati, played in a couple of Super Bowls, but he got out of the athlete business and got right into the radio business, and he used to do a daily radio show, and so he gets broadcasting. He can bring you on the air and take you off the air, so he can do it all. And I always told him that he doesn't think he can, and I'm glad he doesn't try, because it probably would take my job somehow, some way. But I do believe he is that talented too. He could do the play-by-play, he could do the analysis. It's a rare breed to be able to do both, and he's one of the few. Pat Summerall is the best to ever do both, and, you know, is a Hall of Fame talent.
Talking to Joe Buck here, his new book is called Lucky Bastard, My Life, My Dad, and the Things I'm Not Allowed to Say on TV. Speaking of your dad, there's a great part in this book, and the book is so entertaining, and again, it's so interesting because you delve into your life, but your relationship with your dad, and the thing that the fact that he wrote poetry and the whole thing after 9/11 was, it to me, was very touching. My dad actually was in the Cardinals minor league system for a long time. And
oh, wow.
You know, baseball was a huge part of my life. And as I read this and I see this and the relationship you had and how that really affected us on 9/11. And I thought it was extremely touching.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that was, that was right at the end of his life. That was one of his last big moments. He died in 2002. He was in the hospital from the beginning of 2002. till he died in June. That was obviously in 2001, and he was, you know, dealing with Parkinson's and heart disease and diabetes, and he just wasn't well. And so he had written a poem about the attack of 9/11, and it was really poignant. And the Cardinals asked him to go down on the field at Busch Stadium the first game back after baseball shut down for 5 or 6 days and read that poem. And I saw him in the booth, and I said, "Dad, you're going to cry. It's going to be, don't do it." And he looked at me, and he put his finger in my nose, basically, and said, "I will not cry." I said, "You're going to cry." He said, "I will not cry. I'll bet you $100. I said, "All right, you're on." So he went down there, and he read this poem, which was kind of his way of saying, it's okay that we're back at a baseball game after this horrific time in our country's history. And then the only person that was crying between the two of us was me. And he came back up with his hand out like, "Where's my $100? And I slapped his hand, and he died with me owing him $100. And a lot more than $100, as we both know.
You know, you've done sports your whole life, but you've also done some other stuff. Have you thought about it? You did The Daily Show. You've done a couple other things. Have you thought about outside of sports? Does that have an interest for you?
Yeah, it does. But like you said a moment ago, sports is the greatest reality show there is. And when I'm in the booth this upcoming February for Super Bowl 51, you know, nobody in the history of the world's ever said, "Hey, don't tell me who won the Super Bowl. I'm going to watch it next week." You can't TiVo it. You can't. People want to see it. They want their sports, and it's passion, you know, passion filled for so many people. So, you know, I've hosted a couple of shows, some good, some not good. I've had fun with it, but I've also realized when I've done that there's nothing I'd rather do than walk into the booth this Sunday and call the Giants and the Steelers and do my best with a live event that's unfolding in front of my eyes, as opposed to reading jokes that I worked on all day with writers or, you know, trying to mug for the camera. I think those guys are really talented, but there's nothing for me that replaces a live sporting event and trying to put my voice and my mind to what I'm seeing.
Talking to Joe Buck, of course, from Fox, NFL Sunday, and, of course, Major League Baseball's new book's called Lucky Bastard, My Life, My Dad, and the Things I'm Not Allowed to Say. And one more question before we let you go. We appreciate you coming on today. Obviously, you talk about your relationships and everything else, but the one thing that people point out in the book and that got a lot of the press is the fact that vanity got the best of you in many ways, and lo and behold, you did a hair transplant that took, ungodly 6 hours or so, and it literally threatens your career.
Yeah, and people, you know, when it came out that I was quote-unquote addicted to hair plugs, that was said tongue-in-cheek because it followed me detailing how painful that operation is. And being addicted to it makes you feel like I'm freebasing hair plugs in the corner at a party. And that's obviously,
which would be awesome, by the way. I would pay to see that.
It would be great. I'd love to see that. But that said, yeah, I went in, and it didn't have to be for hair transplant surgery, hair plug operation, whatever you want to call it. It could have been for anything. But I got intubated for a general anesthetic, and the tube they put down my throat sat on the nerve that's responsible for firing my left vocal cord, and it bruised it. And so I came out talking like this, and you couldn't hear me. I couldn't keep air. I couldn't yell. I could barely be heard ordering a coffee at Starbucks, let alone broadcasting a game at Yankee Stadium or wherever, Lambeau Field. So, you know, I go in for hair transplant surgery to look all pretty and satisfy my vain bent, and I come out of it unable to do my job the right way. So I was in the midst of a divorce, went into depression, got on antidepressants, went through, you know, I'm sure a lot of the same things that your listeners or people walking the planet are doing every day of their lives. And that's the cathartic part of the book. It's like, I'm one of you. I've it's been great. I've had a great run. It's been fun. But here I am, warts and all. And, yeah, it's kind of ironic that, me getting hair transplant surgeries almost cost me my career.
His name is Joe Buck, of course, from NFL on Fox and yes, Major League Baseball. And we appreciate you coming on today. His new book's called Lucky Bastard, Joe Buck, My Life, My Dad, and the Things I'm Not Allowed to Say. We really do appreciate you coming on today. We know you're crunched for time, and I'm sure this weekend we'll see you. Who are you? Is the Giants and the Steelers this weekend?
Giants-Steelers this week. Should be a good game.
Right on, my man. Thank you so much. You have yourself a wonderful day. Interesting indeed. I tell you what, the book is a great read. It's an easy read, and I appreciate him coming on today. I will have to say this. I get a lot of books, and very few of them keep my interest, and we always look for stuff that is interesting because I think that's important, entertaining and interesting. And when you read this book, you realize, yes, he had a lot of things in life that were very fortunate for him. The last name Buck, the father of who he was, the fact that he really grew up in a sports family that is royalty in a lot of ways. And yet at the same time, when you read this, he suffers the same pain, the same depression, the same vanities, the same worries as everybody else. And it gives you a real insight. So if you have a chance, check it out. Lucky Bastard, Joe Buck, My Life, My Dad, and the Things I'm Not Allowed to Say on TV. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, ChadBenson, chad@chadbensonshow.com. Text it. Love it when you do. 323-538-2423. 323-538-2423. I wonder if Jack will have one of these books called My Dad is So Cool and I'm a Lucky Bastard kind of thing. Chad Benson Show.
Your mama. That's right. I said your mama.
You're listening to the Chad Benson Show.
Say what? Texter writes in and says, why did you have Joe Buck on? Why aren't you talking about important stuff? Look, if you think rambling on about politics for 3 hours is important, there are plenty of shows that will do that. We were joking. Yesterday, producer Anthony and I went out to, or the day before we went out to lunch, and another host, we were flipping around and we were listening, and the host was talking about something. We came back like an hour and a half later, get back in the car, still talking about the same thing. If that's what you want, there are plenty of people out there. I find stuff like this interesting. If you don't, again, there are plenty of people out there that you can listen to that will ramble on talking about the things that I'm quite frankly talked out over, if you will. Phil, our dream has finally come true, producer Phil. It has finally come true. A scoop in the morning of ice cream will make you smarter.
All right. I know what I'm having for breakfast tomorrow.
Yoshiko Koga, professor at Tokyo's Kyrin University, conducted a study that suggests how eating ice cream for breakfast can improve a person's brain performance. According to his research, it boosts people's alertness levels and decreases mental irritation.
What?
In the study, he asked subjects to eat ice cream in the morning and had them complete mental exercises on a computer. After exercises, he found that his subjects' brains exhibited an increase in high-frequency alpha waves, which are connected to enhanced alertness and reduced mental irritation. I love ice cream. Hence the reason I have dad bod. Not because of dad. Like, Jack didn't come out and all of a sudden I went... before that, it's because I like snacks, like ice cream. And I think it's amazing that I can now have a reason. Like, I don't even look for another study about ice cream unless it tells you you could get taller or some other things. Only positive. Like, that's all I wanted to hear, which gives me enough to go. Now I could tell Jack, you could tell your mom you could eat ice cream in the morning. And if she doesn't, she can talk to Professor Kugo over there at the Godzilla University or whatever he was at. Do you think that's the mascot of the university over there, Phil? The fighting Godzillas. Taking on the fighting Mothras. It's the flying Mothras versus the fighting Godzillas.
Can we get
university.
Ultraman in there?
Oh, yeah, Ultraman, giant robot. Giant robot, use robot punch.
It's super effective.
I watched that the other night. You don't know what I'm talking about. First of all, not only am I dating myself, but Jack and I actually watched Johnny Sacco and his flying robot.
I have the complete series on DVD.
It is the I have a giant robot, like a real one. It's amazing.
You are my hero.
Giant robot. Use robot punch.
Heck, like, I'm going to go home and watch it tonight.
Like, how does he know that the robot has robot punch? He just started commanding the robot. Like, how do you know the intricacies of the robot you just stole? It was always my dream as a kid that I was going to find a giant robot and a special watch to talk into it. Giant robot, destroy my mom for being mean. The Chad Benson Show Facebook at Chad Benson Show Twitter. CHADBENSON, Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. This show has come off the rails fast, by the way. Text the show, 323-538-2423. 323-538-2423. We'll come back and see if we can do better, but I wouldn't count on it.
The Chad Benson Show.